Very good day to you all and welcome back to Marca in English's Eye on La Liga, the one-stop shop for all things Spanish football, bringing you a weekly dose of roundtable debate of Spain's top flight. I'm Ollie Wilson, your host as always, and my goodness, it's been a hectic last few days in La Liga, but it is advantage Real Madrid. Two victories in their last two outings, including their game in hand over Barcelona last night against Celta Vigo, means that Los Blancos are now in the driving seat for the La Liga title and need just a point to be able to secure their first title since 2012. We're going to be diving into all of the La Liga title race and, of course, the race for that Europa League spot. Or spots, should I say. Two spots, three teams, Bilbao, Villarreal and Real Sociedad, who will fall short in the race to being continental football next season. And I have three guests on the show today to join me and talk about all things La Liga. First and foremost is a man who is predominantly found north of the border up in Scotland, but can also be found around the grounds of Spanish football. Mr. Ewan McTeer joining us on the show. Ewan, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, good as always, thanks.
Wonderful to have you on. And I hope wherever you are, the sun is shining on this fine day as we approach the last few days of the La Liga season. And it's not really let us down, has it, in terms of excitement and talking points over the podcast this year?
No, not at all.
And we'll be diving into some of that a little later on. Simon Harrison as well joining us on the show. Simon, of course, out boots on the ground at the moment in Spain. Are you still in Valencia, Simon? All things bright and beautiful out there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I am indeed. I'm going to be here until halfway through next month. And then after that, I'll be off watching Spain's under-21 side in Poland for the under-21 European Championships. So the Spanish football continues on for me this summer.
Yeah, no rest for the wicked and nor for anybody fancying their travels around the football calendar too. And finally, and last but not least, Mr. Jason Pettigrove joining us on the show. Jason, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, very, very well, thanks. A little bit full of cold, but apart from that, as good as always. Thank you for having me on.
Sniffles, snuffles, but no griping from Mr. Pettigrove as we get down and dirty in the La Liga title race. And let's start what seems like ages ago, on Sunday with Real Madrid with that convincing 4-1 victory in the end over Sevilla. San Paoli's side going to the Bernabeu couldn't pull off the miracle that Barcelona wanted, or even get us to salvage a point from a game that Real Madrid at times, though, certainly seemed to struggle with Sevilla. And there was a point where it got a little nervy, Simon, in terms of Sevilla striking the frame of the goal with Jovetic and Keylor Navas, who's been in fine form in the last few weeks of the season, salvaging them once again in front of goal in terms of denying Jovetic and a couple of other efforts as well from range.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jovetic can probably feel a bit aggrieved that he didn't walk away with a hat-trick from that game. He did say afterwards that they didn't deserve to lose by this scoreline. Maybe they even deserved a share of the spoils. But yeah, it mustn't be forgotten that Keylor Navas did make one good save from Jovetic, one good save from Joaquin Correa in the first half. And it kind of eased them in. Obviously, Jovetic did find the back of the net with a good finish very early in the second half. But I think the danger is, you know, with Ronaldo and Cruz scoring late on, making the scoreline look a lot more, you know, made it look a lot simpler than it really was. It can be kind of easy to forget about the contributions in the first half. And I think it's important that, you know, you do remember the sort of unsung heroes, because when Keylor Navas makes a mistake, you know, these kind of things just kind of fall by the wayside. But he's been important. He's contributed, as has Kiko Casilla when he's been asked to. But yeah, it definitely wasn't the plain sailing that some people might have thought it would have been at the Bernabeu.
I mean, it was kind of surprising last Sunday when the lineups were announced, and obviously not surprising to see Keylor Navas in there in any way, shape or form, number one goalkeeper at Real Madrid this season. But Ewan, when we were talking about it on the podcast previously, and obviously there were plenty of articles about it, that Zidane was going with the A team for the final three games of the season. And when that starting 11 came out for Sevilla on Sunday, considering it was arguably the hardest game that they had on their final three games and 7 points needed in 7 days, of course, to lift the La Liga title, wasn't quite the A team that we were almost expecting.
Yeah, it really did seem to have one eye on the Celta Vigo game in midweek, and I suppose, you know, he had quality on the bench. If things had got a little bit sticky, then he could have turned it around, and he knew that a draw was enough in that game. You know, it would have taken something special for Real Madrid to lose that game. So I think Zidane, you know, was playing safe a little bit. But yeah, it was It was a fantastic game, that one. I think by the end of the season, when we look back at this, you know, maybe three of the top five games this season will have been Real Madrid-Sevilla games between the Cup and the La Liga action. And this was no different. That first half was very end-to-end, and Real Madrid came out on top in the first half. But, Sevilla could have went into half-time with a lead if, as we mentioned, Keylor Navas in the post hadn't been quite so sturdy. So, it looks comfortable in the end by that 4-1 scoreline, but it certainly didn't... certainly wasn't as easy a first half as it might look if you just watched a highlight reel.
It certainly wasn't easy, and it didn't really get easy until with about 15 minutes to go, and then suddenly Ronaldo got his second and Toni Kroos got the late one. But it was that feeling, I think, did you not get, Ewan, that, you know, Jovetic's strike in the first half that hits the frame of the goal, you know, inches away from, you know, a massive turning point in the game in Sevilla's favour. But Ronaldo's second is almost an identical strike with his left boot, and it goes in off the underside of the crossbar. It's those fine margins that are just going Real Madrid's way in the final few games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's you see after every game, and, you know, if you go on Twitter and you see the sort of Barcelona and Real Madrid debate, and I think the last month... there's sort of been a shift of Barcelona fans lamenting maybe the refereeing, and as they were maybe 2 or 3 months ago when there were quite a lot of controversial decisions. And now there just seems to be a despair at just how are these guys so lucky, and everything seems to be going Real Madrid's way. Like you say, you have one almost identical chance at one end and one at the other end, and the one that goes in is the one that puts a goal up on Real Madrid's side of the scoreboard. They just seem to be having that little bit of luck. But the thing is that they've been doing it over, 37 games now of this season, that it can't just be luck. You can't just put it down to good fortune. And, yeah, they're obviously doing something really right to be so consistent this season.
There probably will be a few Barcelona fans talking about refereeing after what took place yesterday evening. In terms of then, Jason... this Ronaldo legacy at Real Madrid, because obviously against Sevilla he hits goals number 400 and 401 for the club. He's come so good in the last few weeks of the season as well. It is that right man coming to the forefront at the right time.
He is, absolutely. I mean, you can't deny with the amount of goals he's scored in the last 7 games or so. I think you have to credit Zidane for it, frankly, because... You know, he's rotated throughout the season. He's managed to keep the majority of his players on side. Probably Morata and James Rodriguez are the two that are most unhappy with that scenario. But no, I mean, he's played it exactly right, Zidane. And now what you're seeing is a fresh Ronaldo. I think when they played against Celta on Wednesday, that was his first away game, I think, since March. I might be right in saying that. And so, yeah. That's what you want. You want your best players, you know, coming into the form at the right time. And, 2 goals against Sevilla, 2 goals against Celta. He's the legacy will continue. And, I mean, he's obviously just beaten Jimmy Greaves' all-time record as well as most goals in the top European leagues.
And got his 200th victory as a Real Madrid player against Celta Vigo last night. Just quickly before we look at the Celta Vigo game, in terms of James Rodriguez, and feel free, any of you, to dive in on this one. James Rodriguez looked almost very tearful coming off this week. It's been swirling with talk about Manchester United being very interested in bringing him in until about 24 hours ago, when there were suddenly reports that United aren't making him an essential purchase this season, after other papers were saying that perhaps it was going to be a £79 million move from Real Madrid to Old Trafford this year. And Morata as well. Very disappointed when he came off against Sevilla, refusing to shake Zidane's hand. These are two players that throughout this season have felt completely hard done by in this Real Madrid rotation policy, if you will. And despite at times having very important parts to play in successful seasons, James at points has been excellent in certain games. It's just not their place. Do you feel their time for both of them has come already, particularly Morata after only a year back at the Bernabeu?
I think there's two things, actually. I think that both of their situations are quite different. I think if we look back to the start of the season with James, there was a few disciplinary issues, which I think didn't go down too well with Zidane. And despite there being lots of press conferences where Zidane said that James is very important, etc., there's always been this underlying thing that he just doesn't fit in. Morata came back from Juve with the intention of playing, and he hasn't played anywhere near as well as his form would suggest he should be. So out of the two, you'd say you can understand completely why Morata wants to go. James, I think, really has only got himself to blame for what happened at the start of the season with, you know, lack of intensity in training, police chases into training, etc. And yeah, at the end of the day, both of them are actually very, very good players. They get in most teams in world football. But when you're playing for a team like Real Madrid, similar to Barcelona, you can only put 11 players on the pitch. Zidane has to make his decisions and stand by that. And given how well they've done, they're, you know, 180 minutes away from their first double since 1958. You can't really argue with the manager, can you?
So we are looking at curtains then, Simon, for both these two players, you think?
Well, I think, putting aside what Zidane would like and what the club would like, I do think it's a shame to see these two players that, you know, they're not as young as they used to be. Obviously, James is 25. Morata, he can't just keep coming off the bench in these little cameos. And, you know, his goal record suggests this season that if he was to be given more minutes, he would probably, you know, keep a good consistent return of goals too. I mean, he's outscored Benzema in the league. He's probably wondering what else he really has to do. For me, I wouldn't be surprised to see Morata potentially go to Chelsea. Obviously, Antonio Conte brought him to Juventus. I think that could be potentially an option for him, especially if Diego Costa leaves, as is rumoured. And then for James, I don't see where he'll fit in, but I do feel like maybe for his own ego and for, you know, he enjoys playing for Colombia. He enjoys being that big player who, you know, the fans, his teammates look to come up with something big. So maybe he would, you know, fare a little bit better where he is a bigger fish in a smaller pond. But that comes with its own problems, given the fact that he will demand such high wages and such a huge transfer fee.
Yeah, probably Hillsborough, I reckon, is a good place for him to go then, in the heart of Sheffield. That would work out really nicely. You know, be a big fish in the small pond of the Championship. That'd be ideal for James Rodriguez. So then let's move away from the Sevilla game. Real Madrid getting those 3 points. Barcelona, of course, with their victory over Las Palmas. Neymar with a hat-trick. We'll come on to Barca in just a moment. But then took a lot of pressure off that Celta Vigo game. Last night, the game in hand that they had that was obviously cancelled in February. But Madrid, again, it felt like a night last night where in the early state exchanges before Ronaldo's goal in the 10th minute, Celta Vigo looked like they were really up for this one. And for a side that weren't playing for anything in La Liga now for the remainder of the season, was anybody a touch surprised at the intensity that they came out with? Of course, it was great to finally see a full and fit, pretty much starting 11 for Berizzo's side in a La Liga game, because we haven't seen that for a very long time.
I think they were a bit stung, weren't they, by the criticism back in February, because I think Real desperately wanted to play that game. But if you look at it in hindsight, Celta were on a 10-game unbeaten run going into the game, had it been played then. And then obviously last night, I think it was an 8-match run where they hadn't won. And obviously with Celta losing, it's now 9 games without a win. But I think because there was such bad blood at the time in February, then there was obviously going to be a reaction from Celta. And I think we also saw, you know, with Real's defence, you know, they're not brilliant. I think there's 2 clean sheets in maybe 15 games, something like that. So if you get at them, they can be got at. But I think, like with Sevilla, Celta is like close but no cigar. You know, there was enough in there to, you know, if they took their chances, could have made a game of it. But Celta, really, they're just seeing out the season now that it's bottomed out, really. And I don't think anyone, even before that game had kicked off, couldn't have seen past a Real Madrid victory, to be honest.
You might have done after the early exchanges and after perhaps some of the neat, intricate play between Sisto, Aspas, Vess and Guidetti. But Sisto seemed to let things down in terms of trying to shoot from range. And Guidetti, Ewan, just doesn't seem to have any confidence in front of goal.
I think you're just trying to get me to say something bad about Guidetti, following on from last week. But no, again, he is, you know, there's no denying that he's inconsistent, and he's been the star of some of Celta Vigo's biggest wins this season, but he's also been the villain of some of the fluffing of the lines, not least last Thursday night at Old Trafford. So I think especially for Guidetti, who I don't think played last weekend, this was his big chance to come in and, you know, return, like, you know, right off that final kick of the game last Thursday night. And yeah, he always gets himself about, he always is involved in the play, but yeah, as we've discussed many a time on this podcast, he can rifle it into the top corner, or he can trickle it out towards the corner flag.
And it was tough for Celta Vigo as well, in terms of Zinedine Zidane did pretty much play the A team. He had a full back line, of course. Nacho Fernandez's suspension was appealed against and revoked, but didn't give him still a starting place in the 11. Marcelo returning at left back last night. But Casemiro, Cruz and Modric, the midfield three, and Ronaldo, Benzema and Isco up front. And particularly Benzema, who gets a hard run at Real Madrid sometimes in terms of the criticism that he faces. Now, after the goal last night, only has 10 goals in La Liga this season, as was mentioned before, outgunned by Morata in the front line. But he's added something extra to his game, that off-the-ball movement and that ability and willingness to kind of drift out wide and create. We saw him with another little scurry up a byline last night, which didn't produce a goal, unlike his run against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. But he's certainly somebody that, as Ronaldo has started to drift inside slightly, he's adapting his game to that as well and utilising the extra space that gives elsewhere.
I just think he's become a very good outlet for them, hasn't he? Not that he ever wasn't, but as you rightly say, Ollie, you know, as Real Madrid as a group are adapting, so is Benzema. I think the only thing that has let him down has been the amount of goals, because for a centre-forward at Real Madrid, you need to be scoring more goals than that across a 38-game season. But, you know, let's see what happens next season. I can't see for one minute that he'd be let go, because I think he's an integral part of the group. But, you know, goals are a striker's currency, to coin a phrase, so, you know, maybe they look at somebody else to start hammering them in.
There's no need when you've got Cristiano Ronaldo now on 24 goals in La Liga, two strikes with the left boot, and he should have had a hat-trick yesterday evening. What was more shocking, Simon, Ronaldo's miss or the refereeing that led to Aspas being sent off, and perhaps Ronaldo should have had a yellow card as well and perhaps should be missing the Malaga game this weekend? It was a right balmy old affair, as some people would say, just after the hour mark.
Yeah, it was definitely a strange one, because I did feel that Iago Aspas, he was definitely looking for the contact. I mean, earlier in the season when they played against, I think it was Valencia, and Carlos Soler gave away a penalty, it was sort of a similar situation where Aspas had seen the man coming, he was waiting for the contact to arrive, he just presumed that, you know, that the player was going to dive in. And this time, rather than it being Carlos Soler, it was Sergio Ramos, and there was definitely contact there, definitely didn't get anywhere near the ball, and yes, it wasn't Ramos, you know, lunging in, it wasn't a bad challenge or anything like that, but there was definitely enough contact there to knock Aspas off balance. And I mean, people are always going to, there's a fine line between diving and, you know, good play or whatever you'd like to call it, but I really did feel that when it was on that fine margin, it was extremely harsh of the referee to, for one, give him his second yellow card to send him off, and then later with Ronaldo doing something extremely, extremely similar on that same fine margin, to decide to then not award him a booking, which, you know, obviously would have ruled him out of the game against Malaga on the final weekend. And you wonder whether those kind of things are in the back of the referee's mind, because he'll be well aware of the players for Real Madrid, where if they would have got booked yesterday, they wouldn't have been able to play in, you know, the crunch match at the end of the season, which could potentially define the title race. So it was definitely a strange one. I mean, for me, I would have not been surprised to have seen a penalty being given, and then also later on, if that's the line that the referee is taking, where he decided, right, I'm going to send a fast pass, I feel like he must be consistent then and give a booking to Ronaldo for something which appeared to be absolutely the same thing.
I mean, it did seem like a case of heads gone at that point when Aspas was sent off, particularly the Celta Vigo players all running around the referee. Every other decision then became, you know, en masse, en mob, kind of surrounding the referee and getting in his face, led to more silly yellow cards. Aspas himself, his first yellow was for back chatting to the referee. But Ewan, we need to get consistency And not only that, but this will add plenty of fuel to that Barcelona refereeing bias fire.
Yeah, it really will. And yeah, consistency, I think, is really what everybody's looking for. I think everybody can admit that it was one of these weird decisions where you can maybe understand both sides of it. Aspas was looking for contact and he got it. So he was trying to win a penalty, but also that penalty could have been awarded. And if, when it goes up the other end, if the referee makes the exact same decision with the Ronaldo incident, then I don't think anybody could have had too many complaints if he judged, you know, both situations similarly. But the fact that there was clearly a different take for each decision, I think that's what's going to frustrate a lot of people and cause a lot of debate. And we've seen that all through the season. There have just been so many similar incidents in the same game that have just been refereed differently, not just in Real Madrid games, not just in Barcelona games, just all throughout the season. And having, you know, video technology, that's just going to be one of the big debates over the summer. And I think this season is probably going to be what tips it in the favour of technology coming in.
So we're now at the point everybody's played the same number of games in terms of the top of the table and 3-point lead. I mean, game, set, match in the La Liga title race. Malaga away for Real Madrid. Some people have already said that this is going to be Malaga will let this one happen and Madrid will get at least a point, expecting three. Not only that, but Madrid in the last few weeks, I mean, 4 goals in their last 3 La Liga outings. They've been absolutely dominant since their comeback from the defeat against Barcelona in the Bernabeu. It felt like a renewed energy in Zidane's side. Is the title completely done and dusted with, guys?
Yeah, I think so. Malaga, I know, have had 6 wins out of the last 8, so they are in quite good form. But I think if you look at Malaga, Real Madrid fixtures over the period, I think it's Malaga have won only once in the last 14 years, and in the same period, Real Madrid have won 21. I think there have been 4 draws. And Malaga have to win to deny Real Madrid the title. A draw suits Real Madrid. You know, on that, I'm not saying, you know, Malaga will go into, I don't believe all these conspiracy theories about because it's Michel that they'll roll over for his old team. I think that's just a load of rubbish, frankly. But they'll give a good game, Malaga, but they won't be strong enough. I mean, I can even see it'll be like sort of the Depor games and stuff like that, where Real come, you know, hurtling out of the blocks and the game's done and dusted by half time. At the end of the day, Barcelona haven't been good enough. You know, there can be all the conspiracy theories that Gerard Piqué wants about referees and about a number of things. At the end of the day, when push comes to shove, Barcelona haven't been good enough.
Guys, somebody's got to give me some hope for the final day of the season, for some thrills and spills, considering the twists and turns that we've had in the title race all year. Whether it's been weather changing the fixtures, whether it's been Barcelona flopping at vital moments against sides like Celta Vigo or against Real Madrid falling against Valencia back at the beginning of 2017. I mean, there's been so many little twists and turns to this tale. You're telling me that this Malaga side is just going to, all right, well, you know, it's a draw is all Real Madrid need and they'll get at least that. Somebody's got to give me some hope.
I mean, for me, it's kind of a strange one because I would love to think that, you know, the underdog always has a chance, but the comments that Michel made about a month ago now, it's really just thrown the integrity of the game into question for me, because he can say afterwards, of course he can apologise, but to even as a manager of a top flight football team, you can't suggest that there's a chance that, you know, that you're a stronger Real Madrid fan than past managers who, you know, who didn't roll over from dead or who did. It's really bizarre. I don't see how more wasn't made of this, because there was a big story, you know, for a couple of days, and it's kind of just dissipated, and he's not being held accountable for it, and obviously, with, you know, in the last couple of seasons, there have been instances where, you know, managers have admitted that maybe they would have preferred certain teams to stay up rather than others. And for this just to continue rolling on without much in the way of punishment is just strange. The thing which kind of would give me hope that it will be a good game, obviously, that there is the form, that they've won their last 4 home games, kept 3 clean sheets in that, they've beaten Barcelona, they've beaten Sevilla, and obviously they've got Sandro up front who, you know, being ex-Barcelona, he'll have his own personal score to settle out there. The other thing would be that their captain, Recio, vice-captain, sorry, he has said that, you know, he isn't like towing this line of suggesting that Real Madrid are going to have it easy. He doesn't want Real Madrid to win the league. He doesn't want them to be presented the trophy, you know, on La Rosaleda's pitch. It's his pitch. That's what he's been saying. So hopefully it should be a good game. I could definitely see Malaga making a game of it. They've been playing very well. Michel has won Manager of the Month. They look completely revitalised. But I do think that them actually beating Real Madrid, that's probably a step too far. A draw, maybe, but I really can't see anything other than Real Madrid winning the title on Sunday.
It's all coming up, Los Blancos, in the final weeks of the season. And they certainly have been an outstanding force in La Liga. We're going to take a very quick break because we've done well over 20 minutes on Real Madrid over the last few days. When we come back, we're going to have a quick chat about Barcelona, what their hopes are for, of course, their final game of the season at home against Eibar. An excellent victory they had on the weekend against Las Palmas, but they are, from the looks of it, from the sounds of the guys here, going to fall just short in their title ambitions. And of course, we will be having as well a look at the race for the Europa League spots. Wow, love a Thursday when I can't talk. All that and more when we come back here on Eye on La Liga. Welcome back to the show here on Eye on La Liga. Barcelona still trying to find some hope of getting a domestic double with the Copa del Rey final coming up after the end of the La Liga season against Alaves. And of course, they're hoping that Real Madrid slip up against Malaga. But Ewan McTeer, they have to get past an Eibar side. And really, I mean, I didn't even think we should go to Eibar and talk Eibar-Barcelona because we've got Ewan. That's not come into my mind until about 2 seconds ago when I've just thought of it. But you're the perfect man really to start off. Eibar perhaps fancy avenging the 4-0 defeat from earlier in the campaign back in January. And Barcelona, I mean, they needed to win out and hope that luck went their way. It's just not going to happen. How do they approach this game mentally? Because they will surely, if the rest of you guys are expecting Real Madrid to get the job done against Malaga, they're surely expecting that as well. It might be a chance for Eibar.
I think if I were gunning for revenge, it wouldn't be for the 4-0 defeat earlier this season. It'd be for what happened 2 years ago on the final day. And in that situation, Barcelona had nothing to play for. They'd already won the league. But Eibar were fighting relegation. And Barcelona, it was sort of Xavi's farewell party. But it wasn't much of a fun party. It was kind of a ceremony. And Barcelona just kind of lay down a little bit against Deportivo. They played a weakened team. They lacked intensity, and Deportivo got the 2-2 draw that meant Eibar were mathematically relegated. They eventually got put back in the league because of Elche's financial woes. But there are a few players in that Eibar team that you know, they felt they were hard done by a lack of Barcelona intensity that day. So I don't think Eibar will be doing Barcelona any favours. At the same time, the normal thing is a home game for Barcelona against Eibar, the home team should win, especially when Barcelona have so much to play for themselves. But yeah, this is certainly going to be an intense game. And, you know, we have to remember Eibar are currently sitting in 8th place in the table. They're there for a reason. So and they gave Atletico Madrid quite a good game a couple of weeks ago when both when Eibar didn't have much to play for and when Atletico Madrid did. So I think this could be a... probably this would be a trickier game for Barcelona than Real Madrid's one in Malaga, but I think, you know, Barcelona will probably get the 3 points as well, and then, you know, we'll look south to see how that plays out for the title race.
It seems, Ewan, like we say this a lot with Barcelona, but obviously this year it stands out a little more in terms of where did it all go wrong, and it's not obviously a disastrous year in any way, shape or form, particularly if they still at least get the Copa del Rey trophy to lift, which plenty expect them to, although I know Jason and I were talking about it yesterday, that Alaves perhaps have more of a chance than some others, including myself, may think. But in terms of the La Liga campaign, it's maybe a bit on the Champions League as well, where has it gone wrong for Barcelona? Are they just still in that same problem areas that they've always kind of had in terms of somewhere along that back line isn't quite as strong as it needs to be? There's too much of a reliance on the front three, as was discussed so many times last season during the campaign. It seems like the normal fingers are being pointed in the same direction.
I think the specific spot in that back line that's been the problem is on the right-hand side, because they haven't had a right-back all season, and even when they did with Alex Vidal, who's, you know, a converted winger and right-back, and, you know, technically he is their natural right-back, even he was left out the squad for so long because he just Luis Enrique didn't consider him up to scratch, and he had a couple of good games before his injury. But even if he hadn't got injured, that wouldn't have solved very much for Barcelona. And Sergio Roberto, you know, he's performed admirably in a position that I think sometimes we forget is not his position. But yeah, you just look at how good a past few months Dani Alves has had at Juventus, and you really see that Barcelona have lost a really good right back, and they haven't replaced him. And I think, you know, the league is probably going to come down to 3 points and one victory, and there's no denying that having had they kept Dani Alves, or had they properly replaced him, they would have probably got those 3 points that would have meant a league title.
Jason, you and I spoke about Barcelona and their problems yesterday when we were just having a quick chat. I mean, the right back obviously has been a massive problem. The front three seem to still do plenty of the work, and it's always a question that gets asked, and I almost hate asking it, but is that kind of cycle, I mean, the golden era of Barcelona, is that just still coming to an end? Because you can't keep throwing money, expensive money, at forwards and hope that will get you out of jail, despite that seemingly perhaps working for Real Madrid as well this season, whose defence hasn't been perhaps up to a title-winning calibre scratch.
I think if you look at it, you know, look at it on trophies. If Barcelona were to win the Copa del Rey, that's 6 trophies won out of 9 competed for under Luis Enrique. So you can't possibly say, looking at that, that the golden era is over. I think it was the standards they set for themselves a few years ago would be very hard to be matched. I think the real issue is in terms of their transfer business. I mean, I know sort of Robert Fernandez was lauded for the business that he did last summer in bringing in all the youngsters, but arguably only Samuel Umtiti has come in and done very well. The rest of them, I mean, Andre Gomez is coming into his own now a bit more. He's certainly a much better player now than he was at the beginning of the season. I just think maybe they're not identifying the right positions to strengthen. Because, as you've just said, you know, the right back was a glaring area that needed to be dealt with, and it hasn't been. And, you know, people talk about, oh, you know, let's get Verratti and, you know, all these other names that are getting thrown into the mix. It's just because they're big names, you know. Sit down, decide really what really does need strengthening. You know, is Iniesta going to be able to play a full 90 minutes for a longer period? If not, however hard that is to accept, then, you know, who are the candidates to replace him? Who have they got coming up from the academy? And, you know, don't just look at it as MSN and the rest. You know, MSN need to do what BBC have been doing, and, you know, the manager who comes in, whoever that's going to be, I think that's one of the first things that he has to look at, is sitting those three down and saying, well, actually, you know what, you're going to be resting a lot more this season because this is how I'm going to do it. It's a team game, not a trio. And yeah, let's see what transfer business they do in the summer, because I think that will largely alter as well, you know, what happens going forward.
Simon, what's the approach for Barca going into the last game of the season then? Obviously, they were firing on all cylinders against Las Palmas, that dominant 4-1 win away from home, and the Neymar hat-trick, of course, great evening of football for Barcelona, albeit one that perhaps might not mean anything in the grand schemes of things now. And going into that game, I mean, is there an attitude of, well, we'll probably get the victory, but there's no need to get out of third gear, perhaps, if Eibar don't come up and show their best, as perhaps they may not. I mean, there could just be a slightly lackadaisical air around the Camp Nou that evening.
Well, I think they'll be definitely focused on the fact that, you know, the title, it's not in their hands as such, but if they end up, you know, dropping points and the same thing, say if there was a shock win for Malaga, for example, they'll be kicking themselves that they didn't, you know, blow Eibar out of the water early on, that kind of thing. So I'll be surprised if Barcelona didn't come out in, you know, quite an expectant atmosphere at Camp Nou and really go at Eibar and maybe try and kill the game off before half time, because then, you know, you can have your sort of relaxed atmosphere after the break. You're probably not going to be seeing Eibar scoring, you know, three goals, but you could plausibly see Barcelona scoring two or three in the first half. So I think their attitude really has just got to be to try and kill the game as quickly as possible and just really pray that things go their way elsewhere. It's obviously a huge, huge ask. But I would say that with Barcelona being in the form that they're in the league, especially with how well they always do at home, and also with how Eibar have really fallen away since they suffered that defeat, which kind of ruled them out of the race for the Europa League, it should just be more of a case of Barcelona being confident in, you know, their assets being able to get the job done without thinking all too deeply about, you know, the way they're going to play or the summer or anything beyond just that 90 minutes.
Yeah, and Eibar, just let me cut in, Ollie, sorry, Eibar have only ever scored once against Barcelona in all the games they've played, and obviously, as Simon's just identified, I think Eibar have won only one of the last six, is that right? And goalless in six out of the last seven. So all of the cards are stacked in Barcelona's favour, I'd suggest.
I would suggest that regardless of form, in terms of squad quality, the cards are already stacked in Barcelona's favour. But yeah, it's not been a grand finale finish for Eibar for this season. Just finally then, Ewan, what about the leaving party for Luis Enrique as he departs them from the Camp Nou?
Well, I think, you know, with the Copa del Rey final coming up and Barcelona will, and I agree with the what you mentioned earlier, that Alaves are coming into this a lot stronger than people think. But Barcelona will expect to win that Copa del Rey final, and if they do, I'm sure that there might be a bit of a send off there. So I don't know what the mood will be, because the season isn't really done for them yet. But obviously, and the likelihood is that the atmosphere at the end of this game at the Camp Nou is going to be one of it's going to be probably one of disappointment, because, you know, as we've discussed, the normal thing would be for Real Madrid to do the business against Malaga. So it's a bit of a shame that Luis Enrique's farewell party, if we're going to call it this, would be probably on a downer. And if Barcelona do pull off this title win, then no one's really going to be thinking about this being Luis Enrique's last game. They're going to be thinking about how they've just won a league. So yeah, I think he's probably going to get a little bit forgotten in amongst all the excitement. But I guess they have this Copa del Rey final to come up, and I'm sure there'll be a hoist onto the shoulders if they win that one.
It's always interesting with the Barca and Real Madrid managers, in terms of they're under so much scrutiny. At sometimes they're the absolute villain, and the other times they're the hero. And Luis Enrique, particularly this season, has kind of just chopped and changed between those two characters every other week, it seems. It'd be interesting to see how he goes down in the history of Barcelona as a manager, of course, a legendary player for the club as well. Let's talk quickly then about the Europa League spots, because there are two places remaining in the Europa League and only three teams trying to get into them. Athletic Bilbao, jeez, excuse me, that was shoddy. Villarreal and Real Sociedad, all away from home. Bilbao take on Atletico Madrid. Villarreal have to go to the Mestalla, to Valencia. And Sociedad take on a Celta Vigo side that were frustrated in midweek by Real Madrid and obviously tested them on plenty of occasions, despite losing 4-1 in the end after going down to 10 men. I mean, these are three difficult games for three sides that are desperate to get 3 points.
I think it's most difficult for Athletic Club, because obviously it's the last league game at the Vicente Calderon, so the atmosphere there is going to be as intense as it's ever been. I think Villarreal are the ones that are in the box seat at the moment. They only need the win. And I say only need the win. It's not obviously as easy as that, but Valencia have had a reasonable season under Varro in the end, but it's Villarreal's to lose at the moment. Bilbao, I think, because of going to Madrid, I can't see them getting anything at all there, probably out of Sociedad and Villarreal.
The thing is, though, with the Vicente Calderon, it may well be the last game there, and the fans, you know, they'll be dying for a win. But Atletico Madrid have just two defenders available and 14 outfielders altogether, because Diego Godin, Jimenez and Felipe Luis are all suspended, and Juan Fran and Vasalsko are still out. And for Atletico Madrid, their B team are playing in the third division playoffs, so I think Simeone might be wary of even calling up some youth teamers. So I think we're going to see some quite creative lineup for Atletico Madrid, with maybe Thomas Partey playing, I don't know, maybe all three of the other defensive positions. It's going to be quite a quite a makeshift back line, and the kind of one that I'm sure Adoris is going to be licking his lips at. So I don't know if I could see it. Athletic getting a point in that one, and if anyone else drops a point elsewhere, then it could go in their favour. So I think the Atletico Madrid one could be a little bit easier than it maybe sounds on paper.
You've also got, in terms of the form guide, you know, Bilbao and Villarreal have been kind of kicking and screaming slightly in their last two games, only a point for each side in their last two. Sociedad, though, come into this game in a far better form. And Eusebio Sacristán's side have got it right at the right time, Simon Harrison. It's really, I can't pick which two of these three are going to end up sat there in the top spots, all kicking off, of course, at 3:45. You're going to be kind of glued to your set, kind of keeping an eye on what's going on, because we could have goals going in all over the place, and the top, those two of three could change just throughout the minutes as we go on that day.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I'd be looking at Real Sociedad and thinking that they've kind of, you know, found what made them such a tough team to deal with earlier in the season. They've got, you know, a fully fit squad. They've got no suspension. They don't really have anything holding them back. I mean, David Zurtatuta, he'll be back for that game. And they can look at Valencia. They'll be very confident of, you know, getting a result, because they've only lost one of their last nine at home. And you've got Villarreal coming in. They've obviously failed to score against Deportivo. And Deportivo, they obviously were playing to, you know, definitively secure their status in the league next season, but they've been a very, very poor outfit in general the whole campaign. So, for Real Sociedad, just because they're sitting in seventh and they're currently, you know, out of the running as it stands, I could definitely see Real Sociedad being the most likely 3 points. I mean, as you've discussed with it being the last game that Calderon, you don't know what you're going to get with that sort of game. You're not sure what reaction the players, will they be playing with nostalgia, or will they be playing with intensity? Will the fact that they'll presumably, you know, like to give Fernando Torres a good send-off in the final home league game, is that to the detriment of Atletico? Probably. So it's definitely going to be a tough one, but I would say that if you're a Real Sociedad fan and you're looking at those fixtures on Sunday, you've got to be fairly positive of the fact that you can maybe sneak into those places right on the very, very final day.
Bilbao struggle on the road as well, in terms of one of the lowest goal scorers in La Liga. I think it's only Gijon and Deportivo have also scored 16 alongside them. Granada, the only team with fewer goals on the road this year, with 13. Whereas Villarreal and Sociedad, both very strong outfits on their trips away. I mean, you can point at the facts. You can point at, obviously, as you mentioned, the injuries that Atletico Madrid have at the moment. You can talk about the change under Voro for Valencia. And you talk about Celta Vigo perhaps might have the wind sucked out of them after a frustrating night on Wednesday. But there's so many different things that come into this last day of the season for the Europa League spots race that it's almost impossible to predict. I'm going to ask for the two clubs, though, from each of you that you think are going to be playing in the Europa League next season.
I think, personally, I would say, even though Athletic have kind of built a reputation for themselves on, you know, sneaking in right at the very end, I would probably go with Villarreal and Real Sociedad, personally.
Yeah, I'd echo that as well. I can't see Athletic doing it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to stick up for Athletic. I think they'll get it done. They always seem to do it. So I could see them getting in. And like we said, Real Sociedad as well. And you know, Villarreal derby against Valencia. You know, maybe that is a tricky one. So I'll root for the Bas teams and see.
Yeah, Valverde's last game as well. So yeah. Perhaps, you know, they'll be aching for a decent send off for him as well.
I could see it happen.
The yellow submarine sinks at the final hurdle. Sorry, guys, that was appalling. We will leave it there for today as we head into the final games of the La Liga season. Granada take on Espanyol on Friday evening before Saturday. See Sporting Gijón taking on Real Betis is the early kickoff. Then Leganés take on Alaves, Deportivo La Coruña take on Las Palmas, and those are the 6 o'clock kickoffs before Saturday evening sees Sevilla taking on Osasuna. And then Sunday, the three Europa League games that are almost like three cup finals for these two three sides. Atletico Madrid taking on Athletic Club Bilbao. Valencia take on Villarreal. and Celta Vigo take on Real Sociedad, and then it's the La Liga title race to finish the 7 p.m. kickoffs of Barcelona against Eibar and Malaga against Real Madrid. All of those times, of course, in BST, British Summer Time. Guys, thank you very much indeed for this afternoon, should I say this morning even. I'm not entirely sure what timescale we're operating on right now after the last few days. It's been difficult to keep up with everything going on in La Liga, but Ewan, big thanks for joining us today on the show, mate. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, as always.
And Simon, I hope Brand Simon F-Football is going well.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to attend Valencia against Villarreal at the Mestalla on Sunday, so hopefully that should be a good one.
We will be having a chat with you, I'm sure, on Monday about that, if there's some thrills and spills. And Jason, as always, much appreciated, mate.
Yep, thank you for having me on. Let's get ready for a Sunday where we're all like that meme of the cat on the keyboard whacking away as goals go flying in everywhere.
Yeah. I'll leave that one to you three fine gentlemen. My typing skills, that cat has probably put out better articles than I've written, I'm afraid. You can follow them, eMcTare on Twitter, Simon H Football on Twitter, and Jason Pettigrove on Twitter. And of course, you can follow us, Marker in English, on Twitter as well. Follow us on Facebook as well, Football. Just type in Marker in English and you should be able to like the Marker in English page on Facebook. And of course, get on to www.marker.com/EN for you and Simon and Jason's musings on all things La Liga. We will be back after the season finales. Will we be talking about Barcelona miraculously lifting another La Liga crown? Will Los Blancos just cruise past Malaga and get the point or more that they need to secure their first title since 2012? And of course, who will be sat in those two Europa League spots? We will find out when we come back on Monday. Big thanks as always. We'll see you in a few days' time. Enjoy the football and have a good one.